Eyewitness News. Be there as it happens.
City
News. It's 17:30 GMT. This is Eyewitness News on 97.3 City FM. I am Umaru Sanda Amadu. Tonight, I'm here with
Eno Safo.
And coming up over the next 90 minutes.
We have issues with power challenges, but I can say from received from the Minister for Energy that those power challenges will very soon, and I mean very soon, be a thing of the past.
NPP flag bearer and Vice President Dr. Mahmoud Bawumia begins nationwide campaign tour with an assurance that the debilitating power crisis we are witnessing will end soon. But how soon is soon? Also coming up on Eyewitness News, residents of Ejisu in the Ashanti region prepare to elect John Kuma's replacement tomorrow. Will the NPP retain that seat, or its former MP for the area who is going independent will cause an upset? And later on Eyewitness News, the High Court in Accra throws out an application by Honorable Roxin Dapamokpo to force the president to receive the anti-LGBTQL bill approved by Parliament. And still on Eyewitness News, we hear from the NDC, which is asking for some specific actions to be taken on the SML deal, which has become a subject of controversy. Stay with 97.3 CTFM for more on this and many other stories on Eyewitness News. And in business,
stakeholders in the business community renew calls for government to introduce a fixed exchange rate to enhance business growth.
That's in 50 minutes from the City Business Desk. Eyewitness News is live across Ghana on a host of affiliate stations, including in the Western Region, Adrian Power 100.7 FM in Takwa, Beach 105.5 FM in Takoradi, and Sky Power 93.5 FM also in Takoradi. In the Bono region, we're on Greener 95.9 FM in Sunyani. Ashanti region, we're on Adjunpa 99.9 FM in Nkawie. In the Volta region, we're on Heritage 107.3 FM in Hohwe and Freedom 88.1 FM in Sogakopa. In the Northern region, we're on Radio Gaki 88.3 FM in Saboba. In Upper East, we're on Quality 88.7 FM in Garu. In the Northeast region, we're on Nobia 98.1 FM in Nalirugu. On YouTube, we are on CityTube. On Facebook, it's CityFM. That's the handle you should look out for. On Twitter, my handle is at Umaru Sanda or at City973. If you want to send a message on WhatsApp, 0549-986-996. 0549-986-996. Let's settle for details of our stories now. And the first one has to do with the flag bearer of the MPP, who is also the sitting vice president, Dr. Mahmoud Bawumia. He's begun a nationwide tour, campaign tour that is, and he's starting with some promise. Eno.
The flag bearer of the New Patriotic Party, Dr. Mahmoud Bawumia, has assured that the ongoing erratic power supply, commonly referred to as Dumso, will soon be resolved. Speaking to the clergy and imams in Akropong on Monday during his campaign tour of the region, Dr. Bawumia expressed confidence in the government's effort to tackle the issue.
I know that there are challenges, and I don't want to paper over our economic challenges. We are going to work on them. Currently, we have issues with power challenges, but I can say from received from the Minister for Energy that those power challenges will very soon, and I mean very soon, be a thing of the past. They are working at it.
Dr. Mahmoud Bawumia also promised 100% ownership of mineral resources by Ghanaians if voted into power.
For the most part, Ghana has not maximized the benefits from our natural resources. Since the days of the Portuguese in the 15th century, gold has been taken out of Ghana and taken out of Ghana and taken out of Ghana. We haven't benefited that much from our natural resources. I am going to change that paradigm. I am going to bring a bigger focus on ownership of our natural resources. It's as if right now we don't own the natural resources. I believe that if we do the exploration and we are going to empower our universities and the Geological Survey Department to do the exploration. Once we explore and we have 7 gold belts, there's so much gold that we haven't yet even discovered. But once we explore and we know that the gold is here, a new policy is going to be that the ownership of those resources will be 100% owned by Ghana.
Dr. Mahamudu Bawumia is the flag bearer of the New Patriotic Party.
Let's go on the phone lines and speak to Frederick Oparansa. He's a former member of parliament and also the campaign manager for the Bawumia campaign team. He's joined us on the line. You're welcome to Eyewitness News, sir.
Thank you.
That is your region, and also, again, you're used to doing national campaigns, so I'm not going to ask you, but I'm sure there's still some nostalgia in there, isn't there?
There is a bit of it, yes, you're right.
And how is day one starting?
Thank you very much. Let me say good evening to your listeners. And I would say the one so far has gone very well. We all know that after Dr. Bawumia was elected on November 4th, he took his time to outlay his vision on 7 February to the entire nation, subsequently putting the requisite structures that we use to pursue the campaign. He's put in place a campaign team at the national, regional, constituency, electoral area, and even at the polling station levels. And as we speak, there's ongoing training for all the levels of the campaign. That is why he's sure that he can step out now and go start his campaign, so that whatever message he leaves in a particular constituency or at a particular event, there are troops on the ground to carry the message and spread it. So, well, the day so far has shown that the preparations that we did is going to bear fruit.
I see. So how many days are you going to spend in the Eastern region? What's the plan?
For this first phase of the campaign, it is, if you will, a knock-door kind of thing, just touching base with each of the regions. Asking for the prayers and blessings of the clergy, and then asking the owners of the land, the chiefs, their permission to enter their various constituencies and start working. So we'll be touching base a day or two in every one of the regions before we come back to start the second round of tours, where we may go into in a particular region for some days or even weeks at a time before we move onto another region. So for this one, from now till about the first week of June, we expect it to be a touch-and-go phase.
I see. What is the plan about touching and going? Are you going to be sharing ideas, or are you going to receive ideas? What approach is it going to be like? Are you going to tell them what you want to do, or are you going to ask them what they want?
Yeah, we are out here to listen essentially to the concerns of the ordinary Ghanaian and to solicit their views on putting together in preparing the documents that will go into our manifesto. You must also be aware that at the time he inaugurated the campaign team, in parallel, the manifesto committee was also inaugurated. So they have also been working and will be receiving inputs. He's met some of the identifiable groups before even kickstarting the campaign proper today. And all of the ideas that we've shared has gone in there. He will also want to hit the ground running as president and not go on any honeymoon. And for that matter, he would want to know what the issues are before we even go into the election. So as we go around touching base in this region, we are seeking the views of the population and incorporating them into whatever ideas that we have before the election.
I noticed that you've also thrown a challenge to the former president and flag bearer of the NDC to a debate. Are you sure you're standing on a firm ground to debate him?
We are. Our government's record speaks for itself. Everybody knows, we all know the challenges that the global economic space has faced. And Ghana is not an island. And Dr. Bawumia has said on several fora and platforms that this is a shared responsibility. He does not run away from whatever problems that the country has faced and the government has faced. But even amidst that, when you take your time to really catalog the things that this government has done in the face of these challenges, you would agree that the government has outperformed the previous government that did not have these same challenges. So he is ready any day, any time to meet the main opposition challenger, His Excellency John Mahama, to a debate at any place. And that is why we've thrown that challenge to him. So it means business.
Okay. The issue of Dumso appears to be a poison chalice. Why is the vice president willing to drink from that, considering that it has cost ministers in the past their jobs, and it has got Matthew Opoku-Prempeh, the minister, silent for some time now? Even the president hasn't said much. What is emboldening the vice president to talk about this Dumso issue, whose problem, whose, you know, antecedent is a problem, whose solution we do not appear to see in the offing? The people who manage the sector have been silent. Why is he talking about it and even promising that it will end soon?
Well, last week in the DBI constituency, when the president commissioned the solar plant, I remember reading from the deputy minister, Herbert Krapper, saying something in line with what the vice president said today, that this crisis will be over. In fact, I think he used the words like in a few days or so. So I am sure that government has taken some steps that it believes is going to resolve the matter. And that is why the minister will speak like that. And then today it will be followed with the vice president also speaking. I mean, if somebody says I've thrown a stone at you, then they must be stepping on one. So I'm sure they know what solutions they have found to administer to address the problem. And that is why at this point they will all be emboldened to speak that this will be a thing of the past.
But are you aware if... Okay, apologies. We've lost the Honorable Frederick Opariansa, his campaign manager for the Dr. Mahmoudou Bawumia campaign team. This is Eyewitness News on 97.3 CTFM. We are coming to you from our studios in Adabraka, in Accra. Lots of you sending your messages through. Let me read some of them that have been coming through. Akapo Jr. in Hafomim says, Dr. Bawumia must not provoke Ghanaians who are fed up with the empty promises of this government. He has to focus on his own campaign messages and stop speaking for the disappointed Akufo-Addo government. Al-Hassan Hamdan from Nyoni South in Tamale says, thank God Dr. Bawumia is not a new person to Ghanaians. If not, Ghanaians would have believed his promises. Zelis Duane in London says, same old rhetoric. This government is a failure. More messages are coming through on the WhatsApp platform. Prince Henry in Koforidua sends this message, and he says, good evening, Omaru. Sometimes I ask myself if it was the same Dr. Bawumia who asked the late Mr. Arthur 170 questions and took him on until he died. If Dr. Bawumia, as a head of the economic management team, has sat down and unconcerned for $1 to go past 13 cities and a liter of fuel to go past 14 cities, then I can confidently say that come December 7, 2024, Ghanaians will reject him and the MPP. Common Dumso timetable, Dr. Bawumia can't lead his team to provide us and want us to vote for him as president. He should forget it. Hashtag City Newsroom. This one says, how soon is he soon? He should give us a break. That's Ubed from Abokobi. This one says, vice president should not give such a shameful promise, especially on Dumso. Dumso should not even occur if the government is really serious. That's New Dig Ni Atukwe Kwe from Accra. This one says, vice president should not... Okay, this no. It said the phrase power challenges will soon be a thing of the past sounds like a record broken beyond repair to many of us. That's Alan sending that message from Chantan. This is Eyewitness News on 97.3 CTFM. Unfortunately, we are unable to reach Frederick Opari and stand back on the line. You do know that they are on a campaign tour. It's possible that they've got into an area where the network may not be favorable. Or do I have him? Do I have the Honorable Frederick? Okay, we do not. Let's go to Ejisu now, because the MPP is poised for victory in that constituency. The Honorable John Kumar is late now. There's a vacancy that has to be filled. The Electoral Commission set the election for tomorrow. The interesting thing is that that race is between the MPP candidate and a former MPP candidate who has gone independent. Let's listen to the Ashanti Regional Director of the Electoral Commission, Benjamin Bano Bio, explaining what the processes for tomorrow will be looking like.
As a commission, we are going to do what we do best. We are going to demonstrate to the general public what the commission have. That is a system that is so transparent and so verifiable that in the end of the exercise, the results that will be declared will be a true reflection of the desire of the people who voted. And to the candidates, I'm just advising them to also trust the system and provide agents who are very effective, who knows the processes, and who can defend their rights.
That's the Ashanti Regional Director of the Electoral Commission, Benjamin Bano Bio. Let me speak to Dr. Sribo Kwaku. He's on the line. He's Director of Electoral Services at the Electoral Commission. Doc, you're welcome to Eyewitness News.
Good evening, my brother.
How ready are you tomorrow?
If you come to a judicial district office, you realize that we have packaged all the materials in the ballot boxes. We are ready to take off. But we started that we start the distribution at dawn. So everything is available. All officials have been trained. And we are ready to deploy the materials to the point.
Now, is it going to take the form of regular election day process, or because of by-election, the rules may differ, i.e. the starting time, the closing time at all?
Every general elections start at 7 o'clock and end at 5. And they apply to by-elections too.
So, 5 p.m., when should we expect you to declare the results based on your knowledge of the area?
I wouldn't want to commit myself refer to when we are going to end. Because the election comes with a lot of challenges with respect to the people you are working with. If you have a polling station where people are going to request for recount and the rest, all these things will delay the process. So once we are ready, we'll declare.
But the same procedure, polling station results should be taken to a collation center. That's going to happen.
Exactly so. Exactly so.
So the declaration will be made at the collation center.
You are right. That is how it is done at the district assembly election.
What is
the collation center will declare the result will declare the collation center, and that becomes the final result.
Okay. Where have you decided on as a collation center? Would it be the EC office, a police station?
No, we are using a Catholic church in Ajusun.
And that's agreed by all parties in the contest?
It's agreed, and if you come to the phone now, the police has barricaded the place so that if you are not qualified to be there, you will not be there.
It's good you mentioned police. What's the level of engagement with them, and how ready are they for tomorrow? What assurance have been given?
We have done a lot of engagement with them. As they worked in Kumawu and Asinof, they said they're going to do more at Ajusu.
I see. Now, about issues having to do with agents tomorrow and also party members. One person is independent, at least the two front runners.
There are three independent candidates.
Oh, there are three. Okay. Well, maybe the former MP, who is also an independent candidate, and then the MPP candidate appears to be the two horse race kids. I don't know.
Yes, yeah, we are treating all of them as candidates.
Fantastic.
We don't have anybody ahead of each other. They are all starting from ground zero. Nobody has a vote as of now.
Great. What are their obligations on election day? What do you expect them to do?
The candidates are supposed to send committed and educated agents to the center, those who appreciate tickets and those who can appreciate writing, so that when people are voting, they will observe them, and when the counting is being done, the person will be there and they will appreciate the counting and sign the figures once they are satisfied. If they are not satisfied, then based on genuine reason, they should write it and indicate it.
What's your advice to voters tomorrow?
A voter is supposed to cast one ballot and should not prevent another voter from voting. When the voter has finished casting his vote or her vote, he should go home and relax. Getting to the 5 o'clock, the person can come and observe the counting.
There are allegations that you are favoring one of the candidates. What do you say to that?
These allegations are always there. There are always conspiracy theories against us. But when the die is cast, there will be no grounds for the conspiracy theories. We are professional people. We work professionally according to the law. So what I will say is that there will continue to remain allegations. At the close of election tomorrow, there will continue to remain allegations.
The fact that the NDC is not contesting, does that make it an easier election for you or not?
Every election is an election. If an election between you and your wife, If you invite her to come and apply the law, we don't have any easy election, difficult election. The most important is that all of us should abide by the laws governing an election.
What I mean is that, is the tension lower or is the same level?
The election, every election is turned up election. So we are not underrating anything because NDC is not there or that. There are three political party candidates and there are three independent candidates. So we treat it as turned up election. And every polling station is being treated as a hotspot.
Okay, you do not have designated ones. You are treating all of them equally.
Every police station, because you may not know where a problem can crop up. So every police station is being treated as a hotspot.
Very well. Thank you so much. But before you go, my listeners will not be happy if I don't ask you about the running issues about the Electoral Commission, that your BVDs have been found in a recycling plant. What's happening?
Let's finish with the election. We'll come to that. But the most important thing is that those BVDs are obsolete BVDs. They are not the BVDs that were acquired in 2020, so they are of no use to us.
What was the EC's disposal method for items like that? Do you just sell them to the scrap dealers or throw them away on a rubbish dump? How do you dispose of your sensitive material like BVDs?
We have a survey board that disposes of all our material that are no more used, obsolete materials. So the survey board went to the various security procedures and they were auctioned.
So before you auction them, do you clean the data on them? What's the procedure?
We don't have any data on the BVRs and the BVDs. Once they are used, they are turned off. The BVDs, they don't have the data. The data is captured on the SD card. So once you take the SD card, the BVD doesn't contain any data.
Forgive me, what is a BVD and what is a BVR? It keeps confusing us. Can you educate us, please?
The BVR is Biometric Voter Registration Kit. And that is what we use for registration. The BVD is Biometric Verification Device. And that is what we use to verify voters in the course of election.
Is a kit part of the device or the device is part of the kit? Hello?
Hello.
Yeah, I'm asking that. So if you have a laptop, does that contain the kit, everything? Is that what a laptop would contain ordinarily?
No, the laptop contains data when it is being used for registration.
Okay.
Immediately we finish registration, we do what we call end of life. Then we export all the data into our data center and they become blank.
So these BVDs are blank, or they were totally useless as of the time they were found on the scrapyard?
They were used in 2012, 2015, 2016, 2019. After that, we are not using them again. We acquired new BVDs in 2020, which has the facial recognition. The disposal BVDs, the obsolete ones don't have the facial recognition. So we have not been using them since 2020.
About how many of them did you dispose of?
I don't have the figures with me, but I know we had about 70,000 of the BVDs. So yes,
but
I don't have the figures.
Okay, it's only 10 that is being talked about. Is it possible that you may have disposed of at least 60,000 or tens of thousands?
I suspect all of them have been disposed of.
Okay, I see.
Because we are no more using them.
Okay, so this is your board that assesses whether or not you should dispose on the device and how to dispose it of. Does it recommend who it should be given to, or just gives it to the normal, regular baller car that is passing behind your office?
It goes through tendering processes, and if you win, you are given a contract to dispose of.
Why would it be on a recycling plant then, if it is something as competitive as that? Disposing it of itself is a big issue.
It's not competitive. Once we are no more using them, they are of no use.
Because you said it goes through a tendering or bidding.
No, they are government property. So they go through the tendering process. The disposers will go through the you see, once the government property, you cannot just say that it's of no use, then go and throw it away. It's never done.
Yeah, so my point is that if someone has to bid to be qualified to dispose it of, why would that person go through all that stress and then put it on a recycling plant?
That's what the law says. You cannot sit in your house and say that this is of no use. You have to seek permission from PPA, EPA, and the rest. So you go through a lot of administrative procedures.
So do you know who may have thrown these ones that have been found away? And has the person done anything wrong by doing that?
Come again?
The ones that were thrown away, do you know who may have thrown them away? And do you know, and has a person committed any, you know, wrong or sin by doing that?
I've forgotten the name of the company. That was a little something. For now, I don't have enough information on that. But once you are given a contract to dispose of, it means that you have come out with a procedure how you are going to dispose of that. But they have no use to us. Once you win the bid, it comes to your table. And it's like our ballot papers previously. When we finish election after 1 year, we burn them. But this time, when we finish and we are no more using them, people tender for the ballot papers. And when they tender, they pay money into the consolidated fund. Then they are used for other things like heroes and the rest.
Oh, okay. Quite interesting.
So when the tendering is done and the person does it, you may go and see an old ballot paper somewhere. People will make raise issues about them, but they are of no use to the commission at all.
Okay, but because these issues of BVDs are controversial, do you not think that perhaps you should have been more interested in how it's going to be disposed of, even though you have given it out to someone on tender? Because now that it's out there, suspicions have been raised.
I am not part of the survey board, so I wouldn't know the terms under which the BVDs were disposed of. But the most important thing is that they are no more of use to the commission. We have not been using them since 2020.
Just out of curiosity, have you collected them, sampled and tested them, and you are sure that they are useless to you? It could be new ones.
The difference between the current one that we are using and the previous one is that the previous one doesn't have cameras that will take care for the use of the facial recognition. But the current one has cameras, and they are technically, they are completely different. When the two are there, you see the difference.
Yeah, so I'm saying that. Have you
There's no issue of testing them.
Okay, no, what I mean is that, have you seen them physically, all of them?
Which one?
The ones that were found at the recycling plant. You've seen all of them. They are.
My information is that the 2012 ones, not the 2021. The 2020 ones are in use, so you cannot dispose of them.
Very well. Thank you so much for speaking to us.
You're welcome.
Okay, that's Dr. Sribo Kwaku. He's Director of Electoral Services at the Electoral Commission. This is Eyewitness News on 97.3 CTFM. So there'll be an election tomorrow in Ejusu in the Ashanti region. The MPP hoping to retain that seat, but a former MP for the area, who is an independent candidate, Kwabena Osei-Odiomi, is angling to snatch the seat from his, I don't know if I should say his former party. I'm not sure if he's still a member of the MPP or not, but that is just the update there from Ejusu. We'll be following the procedure and the process for you tomorrow throughout the day and let you know who wins the election, that by-election happening tomorrow. This is Eyewitness News on 97.3 CTFM. More when we come back. Please stay.
Eyewitness News. Be there as it happens.
You're welcome back. Let's do some more stories. The High Court in Accra has dismissed an application seeking to compel President Akufo-Addo to accept a transmission of the anti-LGBTQ+ bill approved by Parliament. This is in relation to a judicial review application filed by South Dai MP Roxanne Nelson Dafiamukpo. The legislator was seeking to get the courts to exercise its powers of mandamus and cause Parliament to transmit the bill and to compel the President to accept it for consideration. The court, presided over by Justice Ellen Lordina Sewamriku in her ruling on the matter, noted that the pending applications at the Supreme Court makes it inappropriate for the instant application to be granted. Meanwhile, Nipa Pusamwadu, whose lawyer for Roxanne Nelson Dafiamukpo, has served notice of appealing the ruling.
First of all, said it has jurisdiction to hear the matter. We satisfied the conditions in respect of the grant of, Mandamus application. However, it has a discretion. And so it will choose to exercise its discretion not to grant it on good grounds. One was the fact that there's a pending application. There are two suits at the Supreme Court. One is challenging the constitutionality of the bill. And so the court would want to wait for the Supreme Court to deal with the constitutional matter that is pending before it can make any further pronouncement. We will apply for the ruling. I said I am a bit satisfied that yes, the court says it has jurisdiction. We have met the grant of the mandamus. However, it will not grant it because it is a discretionary remedy, and so it will choose to exercise its discretion in respect of waiting for the determination of the Supreme Court matters. It gives us grounds for possible appeal, and I want to get a certified true copy of the. But I have every indication from my client that we will probably have to go to the Court of Appeal, because if we meet the criteria for granting the remedy and we have satisfied the necessary requirements, the discretion, I believe, should be exercised in favor of the Constitution and not wait and for the Supreme Court to deal with a matter that it has not yet dealt with. What we have is a life matter.
Nipak Bosomwadu is lawyer for Roxy Nelson Dafiamakpo.
Thank you so much, Eno Safo. Let's speak to the man who he represented in court. Roxy Nelson Dafiamakpo is MP for South Dai. He's joining us on the line. Honorable, you're welcome to Eyewitness News.
Thank you very much. It's a privilege to join you.
It's an honor to have you too. First of all, how do you react to this decision of the court?
Surprised that for a court to say that you have met all the legal prerequisites to warrant the grant of the mandamus, it's an exercise, it's a discretionary power for me to exercise. So I will not exercise in your favor. It's what surprises me, because the argument, whether or not a matter pending before the Supreme Court should serve as an injunction on the power of the High Court of the Republic of Ghana to exercise its judicial powers, was effectively debated and rendered moot. Because, you see, what we are seeking, the essence of my application is to give effect to the Constitution. What does the Constitution say? Where a bill has been passed into law, it has to be presented to the President under Article 106. And under 106, when the bill is presented, the President must first receive it, and then he has timelines under Article 106 to exercise certain powers. One, to assent to it, or two, to refuse to assent to it and refer to Parliament within certain period. You understand? So for the President to say that I will not even receive the bill, for me, is a breach of constitutional duties. And that is why I've gone to court to get a judicial power to compel him to at least to receive the bill. How does that have an effect on the matters before the Supreme Court? So
What is the matter before the Supreme Court, to the best of your knowledge?
To the best of my knowledge, there are two cases. One, regarding the constitutionality of the passage of the bill into law. Its constitutionality.
Mm-hmm.
And I post it that the constitutionality or otherwise of passage of a bill into law cannot be questioned until it is passed into law.
Okay, and the second issue?
The second issue is regarding the fact that the bill as passed by Parliament should not be assented to by the President.
So is that not the second issue, that the Supreme Court has to make a determination, and the High Court being lower to the Supreme Court can definitely not... accept your invitation until it hears from a senior court.
Exactly. So the President merely receiving the bill as part of his function can receive it and leave it until the outcome of the matter before the Supreme Court.
We do know the reason for receiving the bill. The Constitution is clear. You receive and you have to act within 7 days or otherwise explain in writing why you will not act. Now, the court is saying to you that it's pointless to send the document to the man if he's already restrained by a higher court from taking action. So what's the point? You just want the bill to go and gather dust on the shelves of the Jubilee House?
Hold on. Umaru, what did you just say?
I'm saying that you just want the bill to be sent to Jubilee House for it to gather dust on the shelves, because it would be pointless sending it there. The President cannot do anything. So what's the point of insisting that it should be sent to him?
No, as part of the constitutional mandate of Parliament is that when a bill is passed, if
effectively passed into law, Parliament is not enjoying the law to keep it.
But now there's a Supreme Court, but there's a Supreme Court decision or case that is pending. Which case? Which case appears to have?
Okay. Umaru,
is Parliament not currently injuncted from sending the bill?
Can we? No. There are two rulings of the Supreme Court that Parliament cannot be injuncted from performing its legislative function. One that is Dr. Amanda Audrey versus the Attorney General. The second one is the form of power versus Attorney General. Parliament cannot be injuncted from performing its legislative duty.
Okay, so if Parliament is not barred from sending the document or the bill to the President, why has that not happened? For you to have gone to court.
Umaru, I prefer that when you ask the question, let me answer.
I didn't interject. I was just allowing you to. I was asking the question, so you can go ahead and ask.
Because the President has written formally to ask Parliament not to present it.
Is that the only reason preventing the House of Parliament from sending that letter?
Which other reason is preventing the House of Parliament from doing so?
Why hasn't Parliament disregarded the letter from the Secretary to the President and sent this bill regardless?
The man says, don't bring the letter to my office.
But the Constitution says, send the letter to him. Why haven't you respected the Constitution? Why, between Bedier 2 and the Constitution, which one is superior?
That is why when there are such stalemates, you need a judicial pronouncement to bring clarity. That is why I went to court to compel the President to receive the bill when Parliament presents it.
What are the options left for you now and people like you who want to see the bill move from Parliament House to Jubilee House?
The normal remediable steps available to me is to appeal the ruling, because if the court agrees with me that I merit the grant of the application, yet the exercise of discretion will not be done so in my favor, then I am minded to legally proceed that the exercise of discretionary power as defined in the Constitution has been whimsical, has been capricious, has not been reasonable.
So
that will be one of the main grounds I would proceed on to the Court of Appeal. The exercise of discretionary power must be reasonable, it must not be whimsical, it must not be capricious.
In your sense, the judge was capricious and whimsical in this decision?
Because the legal grounds for the grant of mandamus had been met, and yet he refused to grant the mandamus.
Very well. Thank you so much for speaking to us.
It's my pleasure, my brother.
That's Honorable Roxy Nelson Eche Dafamakpo. He is NDC Member of Parliament for South Dai in the Volta region. This is Eyewitness News on 97.3 CTFM. We are coming to you from our studios in Adabraka in Accra. Let's talk about SML. It's been a contract that has generated lots of controversy. Nuhas has a story for us.
The National Democratic Congress is demanding the termination of all contracts between Strategic Mobilization Ghana Limited and the Ghana Revenue Authority. The party has also added its voice to calls for President Akufo-Addo to release the full audit report conducted by KPMG on the contract. President Akufo-Addo commissioned the audit of the contract on January 2, 2024. The National Communications Officer for the NDC, Sami Jemfi, stated during the Moment of Truth series that all payments made to SML should be recovered.
And so what we are saying is that let's speak up and let's rise up against the continuous rape of the public purse. Ghanaians have had enough, ladies and gentlemen, of the naked thievery and wanton abuse of the public purse by the corrupt Akufo-Addo Bawumia MPP government. We in the NDC hereby demand four things. Number one,
let me actually go to him. That's Sami Jemfi, National Communications Officer of the NDC. Let's understand the four things that he's making a demand of the government from. Sami, you're welcome to Eyewitness News.
Thank you, Omar.
First of all, has this issue not been settled? I mean, the president has issued a statement saying that there may be a termination. Are your demands not coming a little too late now?
Not at all. I think our demands are coming at a very timely stage in the discussion of this SML scandal. Because of the stance the Akufo-Addo Bawumia MPP government has taken on this matter. If the government had recommended the termination, discontinuance, and so on of all dealings it has with SML, I'm not sure that there would have been a need for us to hold today's presser. But if you read the letter or the statement that was published by the presidency, they say that SML should be allowed to continue the implementation of their downstream petroleum audit services. That is what we in the NDC are vehemently against, because that contract, just as the other contracts, the transaction audit contract, the external price verification contracts, and all that, which governments agree that they were unlawful and should be discontinued, those agreements are the same as the downstream petroleum audit services agreement being rendered by SML. Because that agreement, just like the ones I've already alluded to, did not go through the laid down procurement processes. That agreement was given to SML through sole sourcing without approval of the Public Procurement Authority. And if you check Section 40 of the Public Procurement Authority, Public Procurement Law, you will agree with me that the award of that contract on sole sourcing basis is totally unlawful. And no subsequent act to ratify that can stand the test of time. More importantly, that agreement was not approved by Parliament as required by Section 33 of the Public Financial Management Act of 2016, Act 912. Again, that agreement was not approved by the Board of the Ghana Revenue Authority as required by the GRA Act. And so on these three scores, the agreement is unlawful. And therefore, any payments made under same are also unlawful, null, void, and of no legal effect whatsoever. For which reason, we are demanding a total termination and discontinuance of that illegal agreement, and the retrieval for the people of this country, all illegal payments that have been made under that agreement and the other illegal agreements I have already alluded to. You see, we have seen this government consistently sweep serious corruption scandals under the carpet. We've seen them make efforts to cover up this SML scandal like they have done in previous corruption scandals. People today, there are many people today who are being prosecuted by this government for breaches of the public procurement law and other statutes of Ghana. In fact, some are even languishing in jail today for breaches of the public procurement law. Some have lost their jobs, like of the Electoral Commission, for alleged breaches of the public procurement law. And so this government cannot give its blessing, approval, support, you know, and so on, to a deal that violates the public procurement law, the Public Financial Management Act, the GRA Act, and other laws of this country. That is totally unacceptable, and we reject it forcefully. We call on Ghanaians to reject same forcefully and to demand the retrieval of payments made to SML under this unlawful agreement and the prosecution of all those who have occasioned this huge financial loss to the state.
Why don't you go to court yourself?
We can go to court because these are criminal matters, and under the laws of Ghana, only the Attorney General and Ministry of Justice under Article 88 of the Constitution have the legal right, authority, mandate, and responsibility to prosecute crime. Aside Attorney General, it's only institutions like the Special Prosecutor that can go to court and prosecute cases of corruption and breaches of the public procurement law and other statutes of this country. So what we as citizens can do in line with our civic responsibilities is to call on the appropriate agencies to act. In this case, the NDC has done the needful by calling on the government to terminate all the illegal transactions it has entered into with SML, retrieve for the people of this country the outrageous sums of monies that have been paid to SML. We are talking about a staggering 1 billion Ghana cedis and over. That is some 10 trillion old Ghana cedis paid to SML on the basis of illegal contracts, which, according to the government itself, were awarded without any lease assessment or value for money assessment. According to the government itself, the state has not derived the full benefits of the payments we have made to SML. And according to the government, these agreements on the basis of which SML has been paid 10 trillion old Ghana cedis are unlawful. That same government cannot turn around and tell Ghanaians that, oh, we should allow SML to continue the performance of one of the agreements, specifically the downstream petroleum audit agreement. Illegality is a vitiating factor. You cannot put something on nothing and expect it to stand. It is the reason why the Supreme Court in the Isophoton Waterville Woyome cases directed that all monies paid to those entities be retrieved by the state because they were paid. This okay. government cannot approbate and reprobate.
Okay.
They have sworn to uphold the laws of this country. SML is not above the laws of this country. And those public officers at the Ministry of Finance, at the Ghana Revenue Authority, who disregarded the laws of this country with impunity in the award of three contracts to SML between 2018 to 2019, ought to face the full rigors of the law.
Very well. So you've explained the role of the AG in Article 88, but you also do know that you can be a complainant. Are you, as a party, going to do this, or as a person, going to complain so that you are inviting the police to investigate?
Why must we file a complaint to who? File a complaint to the Attorney General? He is the principal legal advisor to the government. And that government is headed by the president. And that president has issued a statement, a public statement, in which it says that contracts have been awarded to FML against the laws of this country. And Omar, you know, breaches of the public procurement law are crimes. Breaches of the Public Financial Management Act are crimes against the state. So what are they waiting for? Why must it take some agency or the NDC to file a complaint before they act? They are not willing to act because they are abettors and accomplices in this whole, you know, scandal. That is why they are trying to cover it up. Either than that, tell me, why will the government want SML to continue the implementation of a contract that they themselves say did not receive the approval of the GRA board, the approval of the Public Procurement Authority, and the approval of Parliament? Why would they themselves tell us that the state did not derive the needed benefits from payments we have made to SML, and that SML partially performed their obligations under those illegal agreements they were awarded, and to still turn around and tell us that, oh, allow them to continue the implementation of one of those illegal agreements? And brother, we are talking about a company that was incorporated 37 days after the NPP was sworn into office on the 7th of January, 2017. This SML company was registered only on 14th February, Valentine's Day of 2017. 4 months after that, the Akufo-Addo Bawumia MPP government decided to engage the services of this company through sole sourcing. 4 months. We are talking about a company that was 4 months old at the time, had no history, track record, or prior experience in the area of revenue assurance. It was incorporated by a shareholder who owns and runs a timber company. And yet this 4 months-old company was awarded three contracts between 2018 and 2019, okay, to conduct transaction audits at the port, external price verification services at the port, and downstream petroleum audit services in the downstream petroleum sector. This company, and they were awarded these contracts without, by GRA, without the board of GRA discussing and approving the contract,
without the Public Procurement Authority approving the contract, and without the Parliament of this country, represented by the people of this country, approving those contracts. They had three requests to the Public Procurement Authority to engage the company through two sources. Three separate requests. And on all these three occasions, the PPA expressly refused to grant their request because their request to engage SNL through sole sourcing was in breach of Section 40 of the Public Procurement Law. So they were refused. And when they were refused, they decided on their own, surreptitiously through the back door, to engage SNL against the laws of this country and then added two more contracts to them. They themselves say that SNL performed their obligations partially and that the state has not derived the full benefits of payments that have been made to SNL. We are talking about 1 billion new Ghana cedis and over, equivalent to about 10 trillion cedis. At a time, Ghanaians are suffering. Ghanaians are complaining about the excessive taxation imposed on us by this insensitive Akufo-Addo Bawumia government. School children are sitting under trees. Hospitals in this country don't even, like 37 military hospitals, they don't even have functioning X-ray machines.
Okay.
People are suffering in this country. There are no jobs. And then you take 1 billion Ghana cedis, pay it to a company who doesn't even have a legal, valid agreement with the state for services that you yourself claim other state agencies are already performing. Read the statement that has been published by the president.
I've seen it.
Maybe you have not read it, Sander. Let me just conclude on this. Mm-hmm. If you read it, the presidency say that with regards to the external price verification contract being offered by SML, Ghana already has a system called ICOMS that has inbuilt capabilities to deliver that task. So you cannot understand. It defies logic and common sense.
Very well.
For this same government to say that this company, which has been a beneficiary of all these illegal payments and illegal contracts, should be allowed to continue the implementation of their contracts, which have occasioned a huge financial loss to this state.
Thank you so much.
Totally unacceptable.
Thank you so much for speaking to us. That's Sammy Jemfi, National Communications Officer of the NDC. This is Eyewitness News on 97.3. CTFM Eno will be bringing us the latest in the world of business in a bit, and then we have Poem Lang. Please stay.
Eyewitness News. Be there as it happens. Get the details. Every significant financial transaction, every market movement, and all the policies that affect your business. City Business News. Be informed.
Time now for City Business News on Eyewitness News, brought to you by GCB Bank PLC. GCB Personal Loan, make that big move and dream a reality. My name is Innocent. Let's settle for the details. The Importers and Exporters Association of Ghana has reiterated calls for government to peg the exchange rate at a fixed rate for businesses. The renewed call comes on the back of the recent fall in the value of the cedi amongst major trading currencies such as the US dollar and the British pound. The group contends that the continuous slump in the value of local currency poses a huge threat to businesses. The Executive Secretary of the Importers and Exporters Association of Ghana, Samson Asakia-Wingobit, has been speaking on the issue.
It's a matter of concern to business community, especially those who are looking for a hard currency to go and procure goods and bring it to the country. It is a challenge, and all these challenges that or hardship that the importer will go through at the port, the importer has no choice than to pass it on to the final consumer. And I think that since the government have lost hope, the government is no more interested in putting that measures in place to curtail the city from further depreciation, and the government is not also ready to give a fixed rate at the port. Because that the way the city is very volatile with the dollar, there's a need for government to give a fixed rate at the port. So it left the business community into dismay. And
Samson Asakia-Wingobit is the executive secretary of the Importers and Exporters Association of Ghana. The Chamber for Petroleum Consumers, COPEC, has raised objections to a recent report by GlobalPetrolPrices.com, which states that Ghana retained its 10th position with the lowest fuel price in Africa in April 2024. In the report, Libya came first with the cheapest fuel price on the African continent, but second globally. The report notes that Ghana's average fuel price of $1 per litre puts it at the 40th position globally. Reacting to the report, Executive Secretary for COPEC, Duncan Amoah, said the report does not reflect the reality on the ground.
Petrol prices hover above $1 per litre. Question you would be asking is, are you paying Ghanaian workers up to $1 an hour? You don't. And so it becomes quite difficult sometimes to juxtapose these numbers with what we often term as the reality. It could be anything, but probably could be among the least priced countries. So could we also be among the most priced countries on the continent? It's usually relatively compared as far as your economic indicators are concerned. The reality in our part of the world is that nobody is comfortable with fuel price. And so for anyone to suggest, say, our petrol prices are cheaper, you are bordered by landlocked countries who would have to use your port even to get fuel. And so you have other benefits or advantages that they don't have. And if you still have some of these countries are coming in at lower fuel prices than yours, then something needs to be done. But again, I would always relate this to cost of living standards in a country.
Duncan Amoah is the Executive Secretary of the Chamber for Petroleum Consumers. Now, the Bank of Ghana is urging stakeholders within the financial industry to implement innovative measures to meet the changing needs of the banking population. This, the central bank notes, will help grow a strong and well-trained workforce in the financial sector to ensure stability and growth of the economy. Speaking on the sidelines of the launch of the 30th anniversary of the National Banking College, the first deputy governor of the Bank of Ghana, Dr. Maxwell Opokuafari, acknowledged that the college has, through innovative programs and strategic partnerships equipped professionals with the knowledge and skills necessary for thriving in the financial services sector.
It has evolved over time. Its development is intertwined with that of the development of the economy. As the financial sector developed, the banking college has also developed, coming up with programs, courses that has continued to shape the staff that work in all our banks and other financial institutions. Its relevance keeps changing in terms of adding on new things. And we are now in the fourth industrial revolution where digitalization and technology is very key. And we can see the banking college evolving to upgrade its training programs, to update its training programs, partnering with other key international organizations to be able to deliver programs that will meet these objectives. So you begin to see courses on cybersecurity, on fintech-related courses, digitalization.
That was the first Deputy Governor of the Bank of Ghana, Dr. Maxwell Opokuafari. In a bid to boost environmental sustainable practices, LMI Holdings Mega Warehouse has been awarded the International Financial Corporation EDGE Green Building Certification, making it the first warehouse in Ghana to receive the authorization. The EDGE Green Building Certification Program, supported by the UK government, with initial funding from Switzerland's State Secretariat for Economic Affairs, recognises LMI's innovative technology and designs. Chief Executive Officer of LMI Holdings, Kojobutsu Aduhine, in an interview with the media, highlighted his outfit's commitment towards green energy.
EDGE certification establishes our environmental credentials. It's at the forefront of whatever we do, and this is a certification for that. Going forward, LMI has decided that the environment, the social aspect, the governance aspect is going to take a prominent place. It's going to be critical to our operations, and this is an establishment of that. This is the start of it, I should say. This is just the beginning of it. Our next major development is the Dawa Industrial Zone. And once again, like I said before, the environment, the social aspect is going to be at the forefront of it. It's going to be in everything. It's going to be in our DNA.
Chief Executive Officer of LMI Holdings, Kojobutsu Aduhine. On his part, IFC Senior Country Manager for Ghana, Liberia and Sierra Leone, Kyle Kalfa, in a media interview also indicated that the move will enable greater market access for products from the warehouse.
The LMI warehouse is a bit unique in that the whole desire for greening of supply chains around the world is a growing trend. And so this having a green manufacturing warehouse facility in Ghana makes supply chains in Ghana more green, more sustainable, and actually greater market access around the world for products manufactured in Ghana. But next, we would like to do more such manufacturing buildings, more such warehouses, and we want to help LMI with their next effort for increasing solar power supply to their facilities to make a potentially a net zero operation here in the coming years.
That was the IFC Senior Country Manager for Ghana, Liberia, and Sierra Leone, Kyle Kelhofer. That's all for City Business News on Eyewitness News. The business news on Eyewitness News is brought to you by GCB Bank PLC. GCB Personal Loan, make that big move and dream a reality. My name is Inner Selfo. Up next is Point Blank.
Eyewitness News. Be there as it happens.
This is Prime Blank on Eyewitness News on 97.3 CTFM. My name is Umaru Sandamadu. Tonight on Prime Blank, we're going to talk about something that is very common in homes, aside electricity and water, of course. LPG, very, very critical. If you must eat, it must be LPG, unless you're using firewood or charcoal. Now, people who trade in the LPG space, the liquefied petroleum gas, are angry with the National Petroleum Authority, the regulator of the downstream sector. They say that more taxes are being imposed, making it difficult and making the use of LPG unattractive for a government that has been pushing the recirculation agenda. Why are you taxing my cylinder? That's the question we are going to talk about tonight. They were on Point Blank last week, Friday, the LPG marketers, and spoke to Selom Kojo Adonu, who sat in for me on Friday. So tonight, the MP has come in to respond to some of the issues that they've raised. Abbas Tasunti is the head of economic regulation at the NPA. He's my guest on Point Blank. You're welcome.
Thank you.
How are you doing, sir?
I'm doing well. How about you?
I'm well, but why are you taxing LPG?
LPG is not being taxed.
What are you doing? You've introduced a new tax.
So it's not a tax, it's a margin. And the margin, this is a bottling plant and cylinder investment margin. So as you know, in the price board up, we have various components. Taxes are one of those components, or taxes and levies. And then we have margins. And then the margins actually have specific rules in the price board up. So if you look at the price board up for LPG today, we have a margin called the marketer's margin.
Okay.
That's what goes to the marketers who distribute.
Do you readily have the whole basket that you can mention the list of
the components?
Yes, I'll be grateful.
So if you look at the price of LPG, it starts from the ex-refining price. So the ex-refining price, this is the price at which the importers, whom we call the BIDEX, the bulk import distribution and export companies, sell to the LPG marketing companies and the oil marketing companies.
So that's the base.
That's the yes, that's where it starts from. From there you have the taxes and the levies. So some of the taxes you have on LPG, you have the energy sector,
ESLA.
So the ESLA is a component of a combination of taxes.
Okay.
One of them is the energy debt recovery levy. That's on LPG. We have the other one is the price stabilization recovery levy. And then we have the energy sector recovery levy. We also have the special petroleum tax. So these are the levies and the taxes. We have other margins. For example, I mentioned the marketers and dealers margin. This is what goes to the marketers for the business they do. We have the unified petroleum price fund margin. That's what pays for the distribution of petroleum products from the airports. Yes, and then we have another one we call the LPG filling plant margin. This also goes to the marketers. And then we have the LPG promotion margin.
So and you the have margins. the new one you're introducing is called what?
It's called the bottling plant and cylinder investment margin.
Explain that margin to us. And what's the percentage?
So I think the percentage, if you look at it, this is about 6% of the price of LPG. The marketers and dealers margins also around the same figure. The taxes, which I mentioned, is about 7% of the current price of LPG. So
6%?
Yeah. So we need to discuss what is the use.
6% on every kilogram?
Yes.
That I buy?
Yep.
Is going to what bottling one?
So we have the bottling plant margin.
Okay.
And cylinder investment margin.
Explain that, please.
So I think a background will help.
Mm-hmm.
So we are aware that the cylinder recirculation model is being implemented. Actually, the directive from Cabinet came in 2017 for us to implement this policy as part of the National LPG Promotion Policy, which had been in the pipeline for a long time. So the cylinder recirculation model was the new model of distribution LPG. And one will ask, what is the objective of this cylinder recirculation model? We know that currently we have the regular LPG retail outlets. And you notice that most of them are located in the urban areas. So you have them, a lot of them in Accra, a lot of them in Kumasi and the other cities. But if you go to the rural areas, and you're mostly the rural areas, you don't find them. And this is because, first of all, it's very expensive to build. And if you are building a place where the consumption of LPG is low, it doesn't make commercial sense for you as a businessman to do that. So the cylinder recirculation model is a model that is going to make achieve access. So we are going to use this model to make sure that LPG is more accessible to consumers. And it's also available. Availability is something MP always does to ensure that all petroleum products are available. Affordability is another thing of the policy. Three is affordability, accessibility, and availability. Largely availability, we always have LPG in the country because of our planning. Now, access, this is what we don't have now. Most, like I said, most of the stations are located in urban areas. But through the cylinder recirculation model, we are going to have the cylinder exchange points, which are very cheap to build and also very cheap to operate compared to the current ones we have. And therefore, the LPG marketing companies, who are still going to be the ones going to operate these exchange points, can now build more of them and closer to consumers because it doesn't cost much to build them. So if you go to my village in Tatale, come to Pasa, where you don't have LPG stations today, if you're in Pasa and you want LPG, you have to travel all the way to Nkwanta before you can get LPG. That's more expensive for the one who wants to use LPG there. But now, because it's more cheaper to construct cylinder exchange points, they can go there and establish them. Now, how does this work? We would have, as part of the value chain, and let me mention that this value chain for the cylinder recirculation model was built together with the industry, with the LPG marketing companies. At the time, the door, we built the value chain together with them because you need a bottling plant as part of the value chain. The cylinders will be filled at the bottling plant, and then they are moved to the exchange points. The exchange points, all you need there are cages. So you can have different size of cages based on the market size you have there. And therefore, for you to build a cylinder exchange point, all you need is the land. Once approved, you do your concrete work there.
It's just like selling pure water or bottled water.
Yes, so you
so you just have to have a space to pack the cylinders when they are brought.
Exactly. So you have one for the empty cylinders, one for the full cylinders. And under this model, consumers don't also have to own cylinders. So you notice that one of the major challenges why some people also don't use LPG is because they have to now buy a cylinder before they can go and buy the LPG. Under this model, the consumer doesn't need to buy a cylinder. So if you're already an existing LPG user, you just take the cylinder you have, you go there, you exchange for the full cylinder, and you go. You only pay for the content. Now, if you don't have cylinder already, under this model, you just go there. Once you are registered by the LPG marketing company, you are known. They know where you are, the countries where you are. They give you the cylinder with the full cylinder. Next time you come, you just bring the empty one. You pay for the LPG. So you don't need to own a cylinder. And that is why it's part of the value chain. And as the industry operates, we operate what we call the full cost recovery model principle. So every player in the value chain needs a margin. So like I mentioned, in the price build-up as we have today, the LPG marketing companies have a margin to pay for their cost of constructing their stations and operating them. So the bottling plant also needs a margin because we have invested in a
So in, this in a margin facility. Is going to be used to pay so anyone who decides to set up a bottling plant.
So the bottling plant,
a bottling plant, a bottling exchange point.
No, so the exchange point part is the LPG marketing company margin.
Okay.
The bottling plant margin, because now then under the value in the new value chain, the bottling plant has been constructed. Currently, we have four of them. One is in Kumasi, three are in Tema. So once they start selling, in the price of LPG that they will sell, they will have a bottling plant margin in there.
So these four centers are the ones going to benefit from this 6%.
So the total is 6%. $44 of that $80 per metric ton is the bottling plant margin. So just like the marketers have today, if you don't sell LPG, you don't get the margin. So first of all, what you do as an investor is you go and build your station, you build a facility, and it is when you sell that you get a margin. So
these four centers, are they privately owned or state owned?
They are privately owned.
So if a private man decides to do his work, why are you the one charging for him?
We are not charging.
So you are the one putting the...
So what is happening is, just like before we did price regulation, the margins of marketers as we have today was regulated. Similar things with this. So with this CRM, because we are starting afresh, when we left it to the marketers, I mean the private people, to determine the cost, we realized that it was very high. So to ensure that we start this on a good note and not make it too expensive, if you look at the cost of a cylinder, you look at the bottling plants and how much they intended to charge as their margins, it was quite high. Let me give you a typical example. The $44 per metric ton that we are talking about today is about 60 pesos per kg. The marketing companies today, their margin is over 1 CD per kg. So even the bottling plants, they wanted more than what we are giving them. The cylinder investment margin also is $36 per metric ton, which is just around less than 40, about 50 pesos per kg. Now, if we were going to allow the market to just, I mean, the private people to just determine the margins because it's deregulated, we realize that what we're asking for is too high. So we have to negotiate with them and say that we are starting a new policy. Let's regulate it at the lower end so that we can start and let the policy roll out. With time, we can come back to the realistic numbers which they are asking for, because to start a policy and also being very concerned about the price, just leaving it to the market determinants and looking at the cost of investment they've made, they were going to charge way higher than
that. Could that not be because there aren't enough, so there's no competition, so these four can become a cabal? I remember when the issue of recirculation came up, the issue of what happens to the current gas stations came up, and your government said that the existing gas stations are going to be the refill points to be recirculated to the community. How come you've abandoned that idea? So there's more gas, or there's Benap gas, that is where we should go fill up the tanks and bring them, or cylinders, and bring them to this circulation point. Why are you introducing only four places for this job?
So I think the clarity that is needed here is that the LPG marketing companies you mentioned are still going to be the points of exchange. The only thing we've done is that we have...
Why don't you allow them to be points of filling? Why do they have only to be the...
They are still operational. So the existing model is not being scrapped.
Mm-hmm.
It's still in existence. So the LPG marketing companies still go ahead with their business as they do today.
Mm-hmm.
So they have not... Initially, when the discussion started, the idea was that they would just do the autogas. And then they will have, like I said, they will establish more exchange points just for purely cylinder exchange.
Mm-hmm.
Because the idea was that you don't fill domestic cylinders at the existing auto gas stations. But they negotiated with us, we had discussions, and then we had to make concessions that allow them to also operate alongside the cylinder exchange point. Let me mention that
mm-hmm.
the bottling plants you are mentioning are not competing with the retail outlet. They are just where the cylinders will be filled. And the cylinders will be filled and moved to the exchange points. And these exchange points are going to be operated by the LPG marketing company. So no new players are coming in to distribute the cylinders to consumers.
Mm-hmm.
As we speak now, we have about 10 of the LPG marketing companies already who have submitted lists of their exchange points and seeking approval for us to approve it for them to establish the exchange
points. Yeah, but my point is that they already have the host, they have the big tanks for containing LPG. Why don't they do the bottling? Why do you have to give it to four separate companies, which companies are now going to extra charges on the cost of a cylinder? That's what I'm saying.
No, so they are different. What they have today is not bottling. What they have to do is a regular bringing it and filling it through the dispenser.
But that's what you're also going to do.
No, the bottling plant company, I'm sure, I think maybe we'll have to take you there one day, but some of your colleagues have seen them.
Mm-hmm.
They are automated big. So these are bottling plants that can fill about 1,000 cylinders per hour. 1,000 cylinders per hour. So automated.
But we need 1,000 cylinders, because if the local gas people are supplying us, we have shorter queues there, unless there's a shortage, we are fine. Why do you have to give us a plant that will give us thousands in an hour when we don't need that? The demand isn't there.
So I think, Umaro, that brings us to why we are even implementing this policy.
Mm-hmm.
I mentioned earlier that if you look at what we have today, we've had this model for years.
Mm-hmm.
Why don't we still have retail outlets in the rural areas? Because it's expensive to build the kind of stations they have today. So they only build it in the urban areas where they have the guaranteed demand. Now, with the cylinder exchange point, they can build these exchange points and remember, we are trying to target access. And the objective is that we increase the penetration of LPG to about 50%. Currently, mm-hmm. we are just about 30% of the country. If we put all the northern regions together, they consume just about 3% of LPG.
The total consumption.
Yes, because you see, when you go there, you don't find the LPG stations. Like mm-hmm. I gave you an example. You could be posted as a teacher to Mpasa, for example, but you want to use LPG, but you have to travel to another town
to
go and fill up. But under this model, we are making LPG more accessible. So the idea is that the bottles are filled at the bottling plant, which is automated in bulk, and then they are moved to these exchange points. So it makes it very accessible.
Mm-hmm.
I think the major concern of the marketing companies is the price. We are also concerned about price.
Mm-hmm.
So we have done a lot of things to bring down the price. The first thing is, well, they've asked for taxes to be scrapped. As you and I know, taxes are imposed by government through parliamentary approval.
So I want to read the opening paragraph of their statement. They say that the LPG Marketing Companies Association of Ghana condemns what you have done. They say that the truth is the fees and charges, regulations 2023, which you talk about, the LI, are being seriously abused by the MPA. So they are not saying, in fact, they are saying that Parliament has passed it, but you are abusing it. It is therefore crucial that the LI is either withdrawn or reviewed promptly for the benefit of the petroleum industry and consumers. As it stands, these regulations provide a loophole for the MPA to introduce new high levies and taxes at will, which could be done capriciously, as in the case of this $80 per metric ton slapped on the product on the 1st of April 2024.
So if you ask abuse, one will ask, how is it being abused? Mm-hmm. We've not been introducing any margins on LPG over the years. Like I said, we do the value chain together. If the LPG marketing companies, for example, had built a bottling plant, the margin would have been there for them. So the margin is necessary because it's justified under the value chain we have. Now the question is, adding this $80 per metric ton bottling plant and selling investment margin, which is needed, is going to add to the price. So like I said, their concern is about price. We are also concerned about price. So MPA did not fold our arms and just sit down and say, we are adding $80 per metric ton and do nothing about it. So first of all, there have been recourse for some of the taxes on LPG to be scrapped. Because if the product is not available, accessible, but not affordable, then the objective will be defeated. So this is a conversation we've been having with government and pleading that let's reduce the taxes. This is still ongoing.
So reduce the taxes that are already there.
Yeah, so that is
why don't you start by reducing the margins that you've introduced?
So that is one. Remember, a margin plays a specific role. Every margin in the price, for example, if you say let's scrap marketers and dealers margin today, how are the marketers going to be able to operate their station? So for margins, they have specific roles. Taxes are what usually generate revenue for government. So if governments can generate taxes from elsewhere, then they can consider reducing some of the taxes on a particular product or service. And that's the appeal we are making. The other thing MPA has done, whilst waiting for government to respond to the call for reduction of taxes, is to find a way to introduce innovative ways to reduce the cost of LPG. So what did we do? Last year, we started discussing with the BDCs that if you look at the way we used to import LPG, we have different BDCs importing LPG in smaller quantities, and it was more expensive. You could have a BDC paying a premium to the international oil trader up to about $100 per metric ton. So we thought that if we consolidate the quantities of the LPG, of the BDCs, bring it together, and we do open competitive tenders, we could bring down the cost. So we had these discussions, we planned it, and we started in January this year. The first tender that we did in January to deliver quantities starting from March, we got the premium at $30 per metric ton. It's a huge drop. And we see that this is an advantage for us. So with this huge drop in the premium, the cost of importing LPG, this introduction of the $80 per metric ton helps to make it easily accommodating into the price. Okay. So we are doing things to make sure that the price is not too high for the consumer.
Mm-hmm.
So we are all concerned about the price because the objective of the policy is to ensure that demand increases.
Okay. You've also talked about access. The LPG marketers, again, I'm going to read something, ask you if you agree or not. They said that previously the government's policy aimed to ensure that by 2030, 50% of Ghanaians would have access to liquefied petroleum gas was seeing some progress. Was is a word I should emphasize on. They said, however, the continuous imposition of taxes on LPG contradicts government objectives and has stalled growth in the sector. Indeed, the statistics show that consumption of LPG in Ghana is on a serious decline since we hit our peak in 2020 and 2021 as a result of high taxes and levies, which have resulted in a higher pump price. What this means is that the ultimate aim you are seeking to achieve would not be achieved. So the LPG marketers are saying we are not going to see success in that sector.
So let me first say that what we have introduced is not a tax, like I've already explained. This is a margin needed in the price.
So regardless whether it's a tax or not, it's extra cost.
I'm explaining that. So like I said, this is an extra cost that has come, but we've done something to make sure that this has been accommodated without increasing the price. If you see price increasing, it's purely because, like other petroleum products, when exchange rates go up, they will go up. When the world market price goes up, they will go up. But in this particular case, we've brought down the cost of importation to be able to accommodate this. I remember last year when we met them, we have done a lot of engagements on CRM. When we met, people kept asking questions. With the value chain, the way we've described it, obviously, there's going to be the need for this margin. How are we going to ensure that this margin coming in does not make the product more expensive for the consumer?
Okay.
And that's what we've done. Secondly, the consumption trend of LPG. This is not the first time LPG consumption has dropped. In previous years, even without this bottling plant margin, we've seen LPG consumption drop before.
In which year?
For example, if you take from 2009, for example, in 2010, consumption dropped by about 19%. In 2013, consumption dropped by about 6%. In 2014, dropped by about 4%. But we saw increment in 2015, 2016, very almost flat. 2017, it dropped again by about 2%. 2018, it increased. So it has been increasing. In 2022, it dropped because, if you remember, price of LPG and other petroleum products rose sharply because of the exchange rate.
It dropped by what percent?
By 11% in 2022. But in 2023, it has increased again to 4.1%. So it's come back growing. But like I said, our objective is to increase the demand. So we on our own are not going to make policies that reduce the demand. So okay. We are doing everything possible to ensure that LPG increases through the access, people not having to buy cylinders and all that.
Okay. Is a cylinder recirculation in process though? Is it happening?
Yes, it's happening.
So how come no one has sold a pre-filled cylinder to me? I always have to send my cylinder to the outlet to go and load up. What's happening?
So as we speak, we have all the four bottling plants ready now. The mm-hmm. cylinder recirculation model hinges on the readiness of the bottling plant and also the cylinder exchange point. Mm-hmm. So the bottling plants are ready. All the four are ready.
100% ready.
Yes, they are ready now to operate. And that's how come the bottling plant merger has been introduced. Mm-hmm. Now we also have about 226 locations submitted to us to be used as exchange points. We've gone around, we've put 101 of them.
Mm-hmm.
We have a number of places in Accra, for example. You have the Dankwa Glory Station that's been approved. We have the Spintec Glory Station that's been approved. So we have a number of stations. We have about 31 of them that have been approved in Accra.
Mm-hmm.
We also have about 10 oil marketing companies and LPG marketing companies who have submitted more stations for us, because what we do is that we have to go and inspect the place and make sure it has met the requirements. Okay. So now, you will see very soon, you see them all over the place.
And what that means is that the ones that have been approved, it means they are already operating in Accra. The ones you mentioned, the ones Spintex, for instance.
We've approved them, so you will see the cases.
But they've not, there's not a single exchange point that is ready yet.
So there are some of them already. I think if I had the opportunity, I would have shown you pictures of some of them that we have approved.
I want to know where I can go and get one.
I've mentioned some of them. So for now,
mm-hmm.
The place I've mentioned for you, they've been approved for them to put the cages.
Yes, but are they ready? Are they operational? Do you know of any that is operational where I can say tonight if I went there,
they'll give me.
So for none now, is ready.
None is ready yet.
Do you have an indication as to when the first one will be ready?
I think we've been told that from next week, we're promised that from May they will start operating, because we've already approved the stations.
So if they start operating from May, my current cylinder at home, I can take it to them?
Yes, so if you are closer to that location.
Even though my cylinder doesn't look like the ones that are... The color code and those
things. Yeah, it's not a problem.
So I can just take my 25 kg cylinder and then they'll give me a new one.
Yeah.
That's what it means. I'll just pay for the content.
Yeah.
Then I'll leave mine with them. Is that what it means?
So basically what's going to happen is...
Or I have to buy the first one.
No, you don't have to buy. You don't pay anything for the cylinder. For you, for example, because you already own a cylinder, you just go with your cylinder. You exchange for a new one. All the cylinders are going to be recalled. So now with time, you have all the branded cylinders in the system.
Someone wants to know, if you can't buy a full 25 kg, which is the standard... Can you come and say, please give me thoughts?
So I think the thoughts, we've heard so much of that. So we have different sizes of the cylinders. The smallest cylinder size you will have is about 3 kg.
So you fill all of those ones.
So they are filled.
But what if I come to the exchange point and they say, we only have the 25 kg. Me too, I don't have money for that.
So this is the beauty. Like we said, we've allowed the existing model where you can go and do the thoughts to still operate.
So gas stations will continue to run hand in hand.
We believe that with this model, with time, everyone will see the benefit of buying through the cylinder recirculation model. Yes, so we don't have to force the stations to close down.
Okay.
With time, you will see the benefits of the CRM and everyone will migrate.
Before you go, there's deregulation, but why is my petrol price going high?
So that is the reason why your price is going high. With deregulation, what it means is that there's no subsidy on the product.
What can you do to stop
it? We as a regulator, we have to ensure that the product is priced appropriately per the formula and then it's available. So we've made sure that there's availability of petroleum products.
Should we expect more higher prices or lower prices coming up ahead?
As we speak right now, going into the next window, we've seen that the price of diesel, for example, has dropped on the world market. Even though the exchange rate is going up, depreciating, I think the diesel will drop a little bit. The petrol is almost flat. That's with the next window, that starts from 1st May.
Thank you so much for your time on Point Blank.
You're welcome.
That's Abbas Tasunti. He's head of economic regulations at the National Petroleum Authority, NPA. My name is Umaru Sanda Amadou. I did this with Eno Safo. Production by Kobna Wilson, Bevelyn London, and Sami Wiafe. The technical support from Daniel Squashy. The new media support from Edwin Kwakofi. We'll return tomorrow at 17:30 GMT. Thank you for listening and have a good night.
City News. We speak first. Reach our hotline on 0302-224959 and get interactive on Facebook, City 97.3 FM, and on Twitter at City 973.